Welcome to the Toncast. I'm very special guest Todd Robert Anderson. I am not joined by a host this week because I couldn't find one. You'd think in the attention-starved landscape of Los Angeles, it would be easier to find hosts for my show. But as it turns out, scheduling can be very difficult. I had two maybes for this week. They both ultimately were not able to do it. So here I am by myself, talking into a microphone yet again. Had a couple things I'd like to cover this week. The first of which is political in nature. I want to preface this that I admit to being a lefty, but this isn't about left and right. This is about definitions that I don't understand. I have a lot of right wing buddies. I like to talk to them and hear their point of views. Often, at least when it comes to finance, I agree with a lot of the things they say. So maybe I have a little bit of a fiscal conservative inside me. At the same time, I like the idea of my taxes going to help people and paying taxes for things like healthcare and education. So I don't want to not pay taxes. It's weird. I'm a guy who actually wants to pay taxes, and I want to make a lot of money and then give half, you know, or whatever the percentage is, to the government so they can do good things with it. My problem in general is what the government actually does with the money, which is precious little, except for warring and arguing back and forth on television about nothing. So here's my thing, and I was watching the presidential debate the other night, the first one of 2012, which a lot of people feel Mitt Romney won. And I only watched about half of it, and I kind of agree. I don't think Obama was doing a particularly good job of debating, although I thought a lot of Mitt Romney's bullet points were erroneous and misleading in nature, and that's fine. Obama does the same thing, to be quite frank. And I honestly don't consider these presidential debates at all. I think they're just two guys standing behind podiums, a lot of pomp and circumstance, and then just lists of bullet points that the only thing debatey about it is they have negative bullet points about each other, and then they have to defend their own bullet points. But without ever explaining any hows, it's here's what has to be done, and it's general. You know, we got to do something about our energy crisis. We have to do something about wars. We have to do something about the economy. All those things. That's pretty much been the three things that we've needed to do something about since the day I was born. Nothing has changed. Nobody's come up with actual solutions because we live in a complacent world where nobody wants to change their lifestyle. And let's be honest, if we really want to fix anything, one, we do have to switch to renewable energies. And when I say that, I mean wind and solar. I don't mean clean coal, which is just coal with the word clean in front of it. Coal and dinosaur, black dinosaur oil stuff, all that is going to run out. But as long as we don't screw up the planet completely, we will, have the sun until the sun destroys us, which is always a possibility, and we'll always have wind, unless, you know, we destroy the planet to such a degree that the wind stops blowing. I don't know. That, I guess that's possible. Who knows? Anything's possible. However unlikely. But if we use those, then we don't pollute the environment, and everything's hunky-dory. We get to drive around in our cars and look at our computers. But also, just in general, you know, that sort of change, it's going to require the entire world population to change their lifestyle. We need to stop consuming the way we do. You know what I mean? We need to start overpopulating the world as we do. That's a huge, huge change that comes down to every individual. And how do you get every individual on the planet to change in that way? Well, you can't. So maybe we're just the way we're built. We're just built. We are the end times. We are what God or whoever, Mother Nature, what they intended was for us to just grow on this planet like a mold or a fungus or a virus and destroy it. Maybe that's our whole reason for being. However, you know, I really think, it sounds crazy and unrealistic, but really that's the only solution. As far as the politics and all, it just never makes any sense to me. So anyway, I didn't even mean to talk about that. Tangentially, or to get off the tangential stuff, I really apologize. I didn't mean to go political on you. But the thing that bothered me about the debates is they kept talking about the middle class. And the middle class being anyone who makes, you know, I think Romney said $250,000 or below annually. And I think Obama said $200,000. Both like astronomical figures. When the middle, and when I say the middle, I mean the median income in the United States, median. The average income in the United States is $50,000. So if that's the average income, it just seems to me that $50,000, that's the middle class. Because when you're talking about $200,000, $250,000, you're talking about sizable houses and living, you know, pretty luxuriously. And I know, you know, everybody thinks about millionaires and all that stuff. Like, that's the only luxury. But if you're making $200,000 to $250,000 a year, you have a nice house. Even in an expensive place like L.A. or New York, you can have a nice place to live. And you get to go out to restaurants. And you have collections of junk. You know, curio cabinets filled with crystal and shit like that. If you're making between $200,000 and $250,000, so that's the middle class. But yet the average income is $50,000. So I don't understand the current definition of middle class. It sounds like the current definition of middle class. And I realize there's all this other stuff you have to adjust for, because people who live in a city have to make way more money than people who live in the country in order to have, you know, a comfortable lifestyle, because cities are more expensive, blah, 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 blah. So you have to adjust for everywhere. And I realized, you know, just saying average income is, you know, oversimplifying things, I guess. But if the average income is around $50,000, then that seems to be, to me, what you should refer to as the middle class. People make $50,000 a year, which is not living very well, you guys. And that's the average income. All right? Average. But they're saying that middle class people make $250,000 or $200,000 or less. You know, and then it doesn't get until you get to 20, I think Romney said like $22,000 or below, then you're living in poverty. So, and like really the average income is only $30,000 above poverty, and they're calling the middle class $250,000 or less. That doesn't make sense. And I'm not talking about like I want to tax people who make over $150,000 more, blah, 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 blah. I'm not talking about who you tax what. It might be simpler since this is a capitalist society if everybody simply had to pay a fixed percentage, you know, and not an astronomical one. Everybody paid a fixed percentage. Everybody pays, and no matter how much you make, if you're impoverished or you're rich, everybody pays, I don't know, 10%, right? 15%? I don't know. If everybody, that seems fair. That seems fair to me, you know? And there's no such thing. It's just simple. There's no such thing as tax loopholes. And if you want to give to charity, you don't get to write that off. You get to give out of the goodness of your heart without writing it off. How about that? How about you just have to pay whatever the percentage is, and everybody pays that percentage? Simple. You know, just make it simple. And it's still a capitalist society that way. It's not communist or anything. You, if you're making $1 billion a year, you have to pay 15% of that. If you're making 10 grand, you have to pay 15% of that. I don't know how you live on 10 grand a year, but, you know, I don't know. I don't know. It just, it would make everything simpler, I think. Just to, I'm about making things simpler. That's all I'm saying. But in any event, I don't understand that definition of the middle class. If the average income is 50 grand, why is 250 grand or less considered middle class? Just if they're adjusting for people living in the city. But you know what? Forget that. If the average, the middle class is people who make $50,000, because that's the median, that's the average income. It's in the middle of what everybody makes. And you can make the argument that somebody in a city has to make 100 grand just to live the life of someone making 50 grand that isn't in the city. Okay, yeah, all right, we can make adjustments there, I guess, and then we get into gray areas. I mean, life ain't black and white. I get it. But the closer we can... I just don't understand $250,000 being middle class in any situation, urban or rural. I do not get it. It's as if they've defined the middle class according to the American dream set forth in the 1950s. You know, you work for the corporation, you get your retirement, you get your house in the suburbs and your three kids, and everything's great, and it's a perfect idyllic thing. And that's how they're defining the middle class. Like, now, in order to live the ideal thing, you need $200,000, and the rich people who run the country have way more than that. So they look at the people and they're like, oh, it's cute because they get to have their perfect lab. But you need 200 grand to do that. Everybody else is just scratching to get by. I got cracks in my windows, people. I can't afford to put glass in my windows because, you know, my wife and I, between the two of us, make too little. Nowhere near 200 grand. We're nowhere, we barely get up close towards the six-figure area. All I'm saying is, if $50,000 is the median income, then that should be the middle class. The middle class should be, it just seems more logical to me. And I know if I got in an argument with an intellectual, which I am not, like an intellectual or a politician, someone who's like steeped in that and really studied it, they'd explain all the million reasons why they've come up with that figure. But it still doesn't make sense. It doesn't seem simple to me. It doesn't seem like someone who makes 200 grand is middle class. I think that's upper class. And then, you know, if you want to like start breaking apart the upper class, that's fine. I mean, I think there's 200 grand is an upper class. You're doing well. And then if you're making $500, I would say you're straight up rich. And then if you're making a million or more, you're filthy rich. If you're making $1 billion, you are a crazy, greedy asshole. And I mean, and that's that. If you're making that much money, you're just so money obsessed. Forget it. You know, that's great. Congratulations. Anyway, so that was the first thing I wanted to cover, was just that. I just didn't understand that in the debates. It's like I feel alone when people say things like the middle class is 250,000 or below. I mean, that just sounds like it just sounds like politicians who are deeply out of touch with the people they represent, which is 50,000. The average income is $50,000. That means most human beings are making around, like most people in the country are making around that money, and that's what these people represent. Yet they have no clear picture of what it truly is to be average, to have an average income. in the United States and how hard it is to get by on $50,000 a year. That's not a lot of money, even in the damn country, you guys. It isn't. I mean, that's bare bones living. And I don't think these politicians have any concept of what it means to be average and quote unquote, you know, they if they're thinking $200,000 is average, you know, they're just that's assholery. I'm going to go ahead and say it. Both those guys are being assholes. All right, I'm going to move on from politics. The other thing I wanted to cover today was, you know, and people ask me, you know, why do you do this? Why do you do all this stuff? You know, I do a lot of stuff that I don't get paid for. And occasionally I get paid, and paydays can be good. But then there's long lulls in between paydays, and I fill up my time by writing and doing podcasts and doing a web series, that none of it which garners me any cash. Most of which garners me very little attention. So why do I do it? Well, it's a chance favors the prepared mind kind of thing. Like if I'm doing all this stuff and I've gotten comfortable with it to some degree, and I'm suddenly, people want to pay attention to me, then I suddenly have all this content. And then maybe, you know, I can spin it into cash if I suddenly become popular, right? And that, when I think about that, I'm like, ugh, I'm just really over justifying why I'm doing this nonsense. I mean, really, I have this writer's class. And we had a assignment where we had to write our life story in 2 pages. And the woman who runs the workshop wanted it to be just like a free write for 2 pages. Free write, for those of you who've never taken writing classes, is just you don't think about it too much. You sit down, you fill up 2 pages with words. So the guidelines were, you know, single space, the 14 size font, and your life story in 2 pages. So I did mine, and I followed the assignment to the letter, and I did it as a free write. And when I was done, when I'd gone back over it to fix, you know, spelling errors and grammatical errors and whatever, I realized so much of what I wrote in 2 pages, just off the top of my head, free writing, so much of what my life story is about is basically masturbating. Now, and I probably spent too much time doing that. Yeah, sure. But then I was like, well, why, you know, most of my life is made up of jacking it, why is it I wanted to get into entertainment? And I really thought about it. And I went back to, you know, how I got into acting, and I was just a kid in a small town, and a teacher encouraged me, and I was a shy kid in a shell, and I wasn't good at sports, and nobody really liked me, you know, and then I did this play, and then suddenly everybody was like, hey, you know, he was all right at that. Maybe we can accept him into some of our social circles. And why that mattered to me was because I liked girls. And, you know, even though becoming an actor didn't necessarily make me a chick magnet, you know, they still really wouldn't make out with me. But they would, you know, flirt occasionally. And that was a massive amount of encouragement for me at that time. So, you know, the first thing I found where I could get female attention, I immediately dedicated my life to it. That's the truth. And so what is it that I want? Well, what I want is to be, excuse me while I have a sip of this beverage. My throat's very dry. What I really want, or at least what I dreamt of when I was young, was being actually sexually irresistible. All the way, you know, I used to daydream about that. Like everywhere I went, the women would swoon. You know, like I was George Clooney or Brad Pitt or somebody. And now that I've gotten older, of course, I realized I'm not, you know, that's never going to happen. I'm, you know, average income, average looking, average. I'm an average man. except for my hair, which doesn't, like, bring me above average. It brings me below average. I'm a ginger. I have curly red hair. And redheads are not, you know, male. I mean, even female redheads, you know, are sort of, like, fetishized sexually. But at least they get that. Ginger men, and I use the term ginger because I can, because it's red. I think it's a kind of derogatory term, but, you know, whatever. But the ginger men, you know, we don't even get fetishized. We're just something that people will be nice to us. They'll be polite. But they're, you know, I mean, women are very friendly, to me now. I'm married. I'm kind of safe. I'm not going to be hitting on anybody. Cause I'm an honorable, loyal guy. And I love my wife. It's not just out of principle, you know, it's out of love. If I was single, you know, they probably wouldn't talk to me because they wouldn't want to encourage me at all. They wouldn't want me, you know, they wouldn't want to smile at me and have me think, oh, she smiled at me, maybe I have a shot, because I'm a male redhead. I'm a pariah. Is that the right word? I don't know. I'm an untouchable. And I think without the red hair, I'd basically be an average looking guy, not a bad looking guy. But I think the red hair is like a red flag for a lot of people. And they're like, oh, I don't want to touch that. So I think that because of that, you know, and we're going to, this current science, because it's a recessive gene, the red hair. And just mathematically, in about 50 to 70 years, there are going to be no more redheads, no more natural redheads left. We're just going to get. The human race is going to evolve out of us. So we don't have a lot of time. So I don't know why people aren't being nicer to us and just in general having more sex with us, just for fun, you know, not to procreate. It doesn't matter that much, you know, because it's a recessive gene. So why not just, like, grab a redhead and say, hey, redheaded person, I want to make love to you just for the fun of it, because I know it's ultimately pointless, because we're not going to have redheaded kids and there's not going to be more redheads. You know, it's not about procreation. It's just about pleasure. I want to pleasure a redhead. So I think everybody should just go out today and find a redhead that you can give sexual pleasure to, you know, because we don't have a lot of time left. So you might as well help out, you know, help out. Anyway, I think that's why, because, you know, and I only know this in retrospect, but I think that's why when I was, you know, a kid, I became sexually obsessed and wanted all the women to like me, because so few of them did. And I didn't realize why. I thought it was because I was a terrible person, or I really was like disfigured and ugly in a certain way. But I realize now it's just because I have red hair. And fair skin. I mean, I have two shades. My skin has the ability to have two shades. It's either pale or boiled lobster. It's like, that's it. You know, I don't tan. I can't make myself look darker. I got a fake tan for a commercial once, and it doesn't look right because you have red hair, right? So, and one time I got my hair dyed brown, but they didn't do anything with my skin, so that looked weird. Because I look too pale for my hair. It's like a hard thing. And then I came to find out, because I'm doing this web series, that we use blue screens and green screens a lot. And it's really hard to shoot red hair against those colors. Like red hair and blonde, actually. Platinum blonde hair is... Both those shades of hair are very difficult because, you know, they create... artifacting and all this stuff against that. So I'm like, oh, cool. So I have no shot of ever working with George Lucas. And I don't know. I mean, any actor, I don't know. I've talked too much smack about that guy for him to want to hire me anyway. If he ever hired me, he'd like, and was actually interested in me versus just hiring somebody to fill up a space. Like, if he liked me, he would go back and listen to me talk so much smack about him, and then he would hate me. And I think about that a lot. Just in general, this is tangential again, but I think about that a lot, you know, because I have this Film Pig show and we're, you know, pretty honest about the state of movies and how they're working and blah, blah, blah. And I generally try not to cap on actors, but I will cap, or directors, just in general, more I cap on the studio system and the junk they'll put out for to make money, because the number crunchers run the studios now. It's like the marketing departments will say, no, you can't make that movie because I can't market that. And I remember hearing Bob Odenkirk, or somebody quoting Bob Odenkirk to me, saying, well, in any other job in the world, you know, if a plumber comes over and looks at your toilet and says, ah, I there's nothing I can do with that, then you fire him and you hire another plumber. But in marketing, they get to go, yeah, no, I can't sell that. But your job is to sell something. Anyway, we just, I don't know, it's Hollywood, like anywhere else, operates under a massive amount of fear of losing money and blah, blah, blah. But the thing is the funny thing about, I think, entertainment is the best movies, the most financially successful movies. If you think about, don't think about the Avengers. I mean, that was, you know, made so much money and huge return on the investment. But think more like smaller movies, you know, like real risks that didn't sink a lot of money into, but they were risky. And then, you know, they paid off and made tons of money, you know. But that's, you know, that's a big return on investment comes from a huge, huge risk. I like the Avengers. It's a fun movie. It's kind of silly. But there wasn't a huge risk involved because, you know, the superhero thing's very popular right now. And they took all these popular superheroes and put them in one movie. I mean, where's the risk there? Although they say, you know, oh, it's really risky because we sunk so much money into it. And I'm like, meh, yeah, I suppose it could have bombed. But I think, I don't think it would have bombed. I think the first week, I'm getting off on such a tangent, but I think on the first week of the Avengers, if it was a crap movie, it would have still been a giant hit and made a ton of money opening weekend. It probably just would have had more of a steep drop off, because other people who aren't like the Uber fanboys would be like, well, is it fun? And no, it's crap. And then, okay. So it wouldn't have made as much. So I think that's the difference between the Avengers, simply because I don't think it was a risk, but I think it was a phenomenon and made, made $1 billion or something. But I think it did that just because it was genuinely fun. It had a good sense of humor and the action sequences were well realized and the performances, but some of them were pretty good. And they did get some good actors in there who have a lot of life and worked well with each other and blah, blah, blah. So it was a good movie versus a piece of junk. So that's why I think, you know, it did gangbusters, because it was good versus a piece of junk that would have done well opening weekend regardless. That's what I'm saying about the risk. Anyway, I got sidetracked. My point is, you know, my whole life, I kind of wanted to be sexually irresistible, and that's, you know, it's just not in the cards. It's not in the cards for most people, but we're all sexual creatures. I mean, even a guy who's, you know, morbidly obese and spends all his time watching TV and smoking cigarettes and like slowly consuming entire party boxes of tacos, like 50 tacos from the Bell a day, you know, doesn't take care of himself, makes no effort. He still probably wants to be sexually desirable. He's just so depressed he doesn't believe anybody ever would, whatever, but he still wants that, and probably fantasizes that, you know, even though he's this slovenly thing that people come by and are like, holy mackerel, like, despite your slovenly appearance, I have to have you. I'm not slovenly. I don't have six-pack abs. I got a little 40-year-old belly on me, sure. But I'm not slovenly. You know, I'm not. You know, I don't look like I've given up. But I don't. You know, I just don't warrant that sort of attention. But, you know, like anybody else, and I think most of us are probably more like me, in that we're regular old folks, but we still want to be the center of sexual attention? Is that, is it, maybe I'm crazy. Maybe I am just sexually obsessed and there's something wrong with me. Maybe it's that, you know, there's something in my brain because I have I'm a redhead and there's the redheads are dying out. And my brain is panicked and it's like trying to get me to hump as much as possible. I don't know. Maybe I'm alone on this, but maybe we all are sexual creatures for the most part. And, I don't know. It's just sort of depressing that I can't be sexually irresistible. That's all I'm saying. I'm just going to wrap this thing up.